Let's sell Simon's Town.
Okay.
We sell half of it to the Chinese and half of it to the Americans.
Now, I just want to know what the current owners will have to say about it. Have you asked the Russians whether you can sell Simon's Town? Well, good afternoon, in fact, as it turns out.
Good afternoon.
I've just returned from Natal.
Right.
Where, together with Breadline, we opened yet another school of flushing toilets that previously had pit latrines. Now, I've got to say something about it for two reasons. One, both ministers, the Minister of Basic Education,
yes,
and the Minister of Public Works, pitched up
right
to come to the launch. And that's a pretty good effort,
good,
in my view. So I think they're serious about it.
Yeah, and they brought money with them, obviously. They brought government contracts.
Yeah, no, we're the ones giving the money. Yeah,
you had to supply the money. Oh, okay. Just checking.
Right. This is a school that has got more trophies in the headmaster's office than I've ever seen in any headmaster's office, and yet they didn't have flushing toilets. Eh? I mean, they've won so many awards, and the choir was beautiful. Anyway, it's a fabulous thing. It's something I'm closely involved, close to my heart, and I'm loving being involved in it. So enough of that. But talking about schools, I saw a tweet just now that said the schools in New Delhi were closed today because the smog is too toxic to breathe. What do you do about that?
There was a stage where it was very unfashionable to talk about climate change. Then there was a stage where it was very unfashionable to not talk about climate change. And now we've gone back to it's very unfashionable to talk about climate change. And because people have just had enough of it, you know, there was just like going on and on and on. But now I notice they had COP 94 or whatever it is, you know, in a petro state for the second time in a row. Even for my cynical kind of mind, I think that's kind of stretching it. And you know, and the odd thing is that we've made all of these agreements to kind of reduce our fossil fuels, and everybody stood in these COP things and said very earnestly that they were going to do this, they were going to. Well, it turns out that the amount of participants in the atmosphere or whatever it is, particles in the atmosphere, has actually increased. So they've had this a series of global agreements that have resulted in an increase. And that is why Delhi still has smog, is basically my view of things. Sorry to gab on.
I guess you're hosting them in the petro states because those are the only people who can afford it. Okay, so
yes.
Carl, there's another bit of competition going on between, you know, the virtue of green world that we all seek and its affordability in terms of, you know, established sources of energy and things of that nature. But yeah, it is a problem. But, you know, a soft plug. I'm 68, so it's a problem. we do have to solve the problem.
It's a problem somebody should really deal with.
Exactly.
Somebody should be seized of that.
Sort it out, man, please. Okay. Anyway.
Moving on. Can I ask you, so now Bitcoin is now 1.5 million
a shot
for one.
Each.
Yeah, a shot. Would you buy it at this point?
I happen to have a tiny bit of exposure to Bitcoin, just because I'm interested in it.
Okay.
And you need to know this. What is the return on Bitcoin, if you bought it when it came out sort of in 2018? Do you have a guess what it might have been to date? What do you think? I'll give you. Have a guess, man. I always have to guess and make
2 million, no, million no, 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 percent, no. Maybe.
Stay on the planet. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
nothing increases by 1,000,000%, but you must go back to compound interest 101. But it is 24,181% to date since its introduction. Okay. So do I think it'll go up? I mean, this latest spurt is a reaction to, if you like, Trump's support for the Bitcoin and Elon and all that sort of jazz.
Right.
I've got two bits of advice about Bitcoin to people who are thinking of getting in now, or three. The first one is don't ever invest in something you don't understand. And so, A. B, you know, if it's too good to be true, it's not going to last. Okay. And C, which is the point about where we are now, you should never start drinking when everyone else is drunk, because you'll be suffering your hangover on your ace. But having said that, fundamentally, there is an argument to be made that Bitcoin is a conqueror of inflation, that Bitcoin starts circumventing government intervention in relative currency valuation, that Bitcoin has got limited supply, and all of those, if you like, immunities that it has to political suasion, which I think is its foundation for future success.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe now when it has gone up, by 25% in the last 2 weeks or whatever it is, is not the sort of perfect time to buy. But it is getting big. I mean, it really is. The argument that it's a store of value, I think, improves with the quantity of value that people are pumping into it, right?
I was in an Uber on the way back from the Gautrain now. And I always asked the guy, and he said, the driver, very nice Uber. I said, where are you from? It's in Zimbabwe. We talked about this and that. We talked about currency, funny enough. And I said to him, so what do you think is going to happen with the currency then? He said, the currency is shocked. I said, well, you know, should you adopt the rand? And he couldn't have been more enthusiastic about doing that. He says the dollar is sort of too far removed from their sort of whatever. And so I think we would suffer if our neighbors started adopting the rand as their currency. But what we didn't get onto is the possibility of Bitcoin becoming, if you will, a national currency for currencies that are as volatile, you know, as perhaps the dollar has been.
The reason, if I understand it correctly, just correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason why it has gone up by 25% in the last week is essentially because the plan in the US, according to the Trump administration, is to add the confiscated Bitcoin, of which there is a small mountain in America, and add that to America's reserves.
Yeah.
So what that does is it effectively makes it a legitimate reserve currency. And that sort of changes the game a bit, because it means, you know, there have been governments around the world that have adopted Bitcoin and so on, like El Salvador is the famous one. But just the idea that you could use something other than gold as, you know, as your kind of store of value just opens up. So this is not, you know, enthusiastic text buying. It's actual government.
I don't know if he means to underpin the dollar with Bitcoin, but there is talk of it becoming a so-called strategic reserve. And of course, this has bullied it up a bit. Bullied it up a bit, I mean, because him and the new bromance of the world, of course, is Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Now, it's an interesting intersection, because you have arguably the most powerful man in the world becoming big mates with arguably the richest man in the world. Now, that all sounds too fabulous when it intersects, but these two gentlemen are not, you know, unpleased with themselves. You know, they get on very well with themselves. They probably get on better with themselves than they will end up getting on with each other. In fact, I would argue there will be a day when they have a fight, okay? And that's the classic, when elephants fight, the ground gets squashed a bit. So I'm not looking forward to that, but, you know, we're on to the next level of power beyond money. Talking about power, can I talk about the absence of power? Because I read the other day that our Navy has got one working ship.
Listen, do you really need ships? I mean, does a Navy honestly need ships?
Exactly. Should we just change the name and call it the Army?
With a non-ship Navy.
We should just call it that. No, but if you are down to your last ship, okay, then I think you start having to go like, okay. I mean, are we at war with anyone? You know? I mean, is someone coming to invade Simonstown? Should we fire up and clean out those old cannons? Because there's some fabulous dead assets in Navy, you know, in Mar- But then I started thinking, and I'm probably going to write a story about this. I think, what should we do about our sea and protecting it and using it? You know, our border, which is the sea, which is a huge, huge border.
Right.
And I think it is fertile for drug smuggling and all of those kinds of things, because, you know, you go into no man's land, or what do they call it when you're beyond your In the open seas, nobody claims you. It's, you know, you yeah. get out of jurisdiction. So if you want to go and do something naughty, then you jump into a boat, although all of you won't fit on the Navy boat, and you whiz out beyond the border of our waters and you do whatever you hell like and come back in again. So I think we need a maritime presence for matters other than an anticipated invasion.
I've got a different idea, and I think you're going to like it a lot.
I'm sure. Okay. I can't wait. Yeah.
Let's sell Simonstown.
Okay.
We sell half of it to the Chinese and half of it to the Americans.
Now, I just want to know what the current owners, which are Russia, will have to say about that. Have you asked the Russians whether you can sell Simonstown to the Chinese?
No, but I'm joking, but I'm also half serious. Because, you know, the thing about Simonstown is that it's a very natural harbor in a great spot. Yeah. I mean, the efficiency determines that ships that are going around the tip of Africa, you know, the most efficient route is as close to Cape Town as you can go, right? So it's a good idea to place your monitoring effort there. But now, assuming you got permission from the Russians to sell Simonstown to the Americans, that would be a very kind of like aggressive, you know, sort of geopolitical move. But what about selling it to both of them? They could both ship their ships there. Who can complain about that? I mean, and the additional booster would be that we would have some kind of military presence in our waters. And honestly, in that case, you know, the Botswana Navy is probably not going to attack us.
I'd argue for a slightly different economical model to support your cause, which is, why don't we rent it to them? Okay. I mean, we don't have to sell it. We own it. Yeah. We enter into all sorts of fabulous long-term leases with all sorts of things attached to them. And the condition is that they give us a couple of boats, man. Come on, man. Give us just a frigate or two. Okay. I think it is a strategic place. Of course, the commercial southern tip of Africa port is Cape Town, not Simonstown. One's a naval base, and there isn't much supporting infrastructure for commercial economic activity. But if you want to protect yourself from the seagulls, there is no better place than to be than in Simonstown. Okay. We'll see what happens. Okay.
Yes. And also, there's great penguins. Okay.
Yeah. The emperor penguin. Good. I mean, let's do it, Tim. Let's get the mandate and get on with it. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. What is your position about lying on your CV? Are you pro lying on your CV or against lying on your CV? I mean, we're not talking lying, obviously. I'm not talking, I mean, we're nothing so obvious. Please. Just slight embellishment,
Here's the thing. Don't, would be my opinion. Right. And the reason for that, is not just because it's a bad thing to do, but because if the lie has got any gravitas, it's going to have to refer to an institution with reputation, okay? I mean, if you want to say, I got a PhD from the London School of Economics, I think there was a case like that, or whatever it is, then I think you're going to get found out, okay? Because the very value of that qualification is protected by the institutions that issue it, okay? So my argument is, of course, it's a stupid thing to do, and you'll always get found out. And so beyond just its silliness, it's a stupid lie.
No, I'm just – obviously, I'm talking about this because last week the JSE fined – Lekoa, 500,000 I was going to say Dr. Tawie Lekoa, obviously, Ms. Tawie Lekoa, $500,000 and disqualified her from holding directorships for 5 years because she lied about completing her PhD, in their view. Well, I think it's pretty obvious. But anyway, and, you know, I sort of couldn't help myself. I felt such a twinge of sort of, you know, sympathy. Because, you know, she doesn't have a PhD, but she does have an undergraduate degree, obviously, and a postgraduate degree, both from very, you know, sort of important academic institutions, which, by the way, is quite a lot more than, you know, 99% of the population of South Africa. So, you know, it's sort of like, I feel like it's like so stupid thing to. And you know what really irks me is that, so she's been found out she's been given a huge fine. She's
barred for 5 years.
Her name has been dragged through the mud. Okay. But there are a gazillion people in South Africa, you know, who have been accused of much, much bigger crimes, who are in parliament, you know, in the governing, you know, institution of our country. It's just, I find that shocking. I'm sorry, it just seems very odd.
Listen, if one gets caught, all should get caught and found out. I agree. I mean, that's obvious. Okay. You have to go back to one of the root drivers, which, you know, does introduce a tiny bit of sympathy, which is this, is that if you watch soccer, Premier League soccer, the amount of pretended fouls is on the increase. Okay. So you know, people who didn't come within 2 foot of somebody else suddenly grab their foot and roll about in a display of, you know, pain and anguish until the referee blows a whistle and gives them a penalty. And the reason they do that is because they want to get a penalty almost at any cost. And here we have, as a proxy, a very weak proxy for capability, we have academic qualifications, true or false, okay? And so if you want to get somewhere, it's not what you can do or what you've evidence to do, but what you can sort of get into. I'm aware of a job that I was looking at, which requires, you know, particularly university qualification, which I don't have. And it's a bit like saying you have to be a doctor to run a hospital. You don't, okay? And so the system has got its uppance. It's got its comeuppance. If you value a piece of paper that can be somehow manufactured more than evidence of ability, you're going to get this kind of result.
But it is a particular problem in South Africa, I think.
It is. It is unique to us.
Well, partly because my experience is that as a journalist, people are often telling me about people who are lying about their qualifications. And it's happening a lot. I just get the feeling that it's happening a lot. And you can see why, because there's a whole bunch of public sector organizations, from municipalities to government departments to state-owned enterprises, which want, you know, high qualified candidates. But actually, high qualified candidates don't want them. They are being absorbed by the private sector with aggression. And there's an overall skills shortage. So into that gap, you know, what's happening is people are kind of like, you know, they're lowering the standards for a start for the qualifications required for a job. And they sort of turning a blind eye to, you know, sort of little imperfections in CVs. You know, they sort of confusing, you know, courses which are done as kind of MBA additions for an actual sort of course of study. So, yeah, it's more of a problem than it seems.
If you start at the top and you look at the prerequisite qualifications to be appointed a minister in our government, they are zero.
Okay.
There is no CV.
Yeah.
Okay. No, exactly. And so
this is such an irony.
And so when you are to climb the ladder, to those who, you know, have got appointed for popularity purposes start to build protections around them, like you need to have a degree, you know, sort of barriers to entry to keep their position, don't they? I
mean, yeah. No, exactly. I mean, it's the strangest thing that the, you know, people are right at the top of these organizations, you know, don't need the qualifications that...
My final view on this, last point, is I don't think qualifications maketh man. Okay. I really don't. Okay. I don't, you know, there's some, you have to, you can't be a dentist by the popular vote. Okay. You have to like study. Okay. You know, because you have to know which injection goes in where and so on. But general, in particular, business degrees and qualifications, there's an argument and evidence to support that the qualification is but a small part of the evidence stability and the outcome achieved. And so one of my sons about to start university, and I said to him, you know, focus on two things. Focus on communication and logic, which if you take it back to matric, it's kind of English and maths. Once you've got those, you can start choosing where to go.
Yes. Oh, that's good advice. All right. Mark, thank you very much for the conversation. That was fun as always.
Thank you.
We will talk again
next week. Next time.
Good luck with the building of the toilet.
It's going well.
Cheers. Cheers, man.